As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello out there, you are listening to Jurassic Pod. As we record this, it is just after noon. On Wednesday, March the 2nd. Love that smarch weather. Joining me, as always, is Holly McKenzie. Holly, I don't have the Olympics to ask you about anymore. I don't think we want to talk about the other big world affair going on.
So
I'll just ask, like a normal human, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. How about you? I'm trying to use sports as a
escape, as an escape,
brief escape from everything else. Yes.
which
worked out on Tuesday night. Didn't work out so well in the Raptors' first games back after the.
So you needed to escape to only be positive. Like it can't be an outlet for your like anger or frustration. It has to just be joy.
It has to be good.
Yeah. Well, that's fair to put on a team that, you know, is good segue. 14th
listen,
in
listen,
offense
Eric.
And 14th in defense in the NBA.
Listen, Eric, life isn't fair.
I know. Anyway, I'm doing fine. I was on this last road trip. Unlike a few folks who Raptors fans have now heard, Matt Devlin, Jack Armstrong, a few others behind the scenes, I believe, who got sick on this trip, and they are still in various locations where the Raptors were. I am back in Toronto. We wish them speedy recoveries. From what I've talked to with Matt and Jack, they sound like they're doing all right. So hopefully that continues.
I had not thought about the fact that they would have to be where they were on the trip. Oh,
yeah,
man.
No, like that's... Matt, I don't think I'm breaking any confidentiality here. Matt is in Charlotte. He, of course, worked there at the beginning of his NBA career. Jack is in New York, I believe, and he's from Brooklyn. At some point, Jack will be able to go home because he lives in the States. He splits time between the Buffalo area and Florida. So, but there is a, I believe, don't quote me on this, I still think, unless you're able to, you know, be a professional sports team and get your star players back across the country, like the Raptors did with OG Anunoby, I think it's 10 days. And so when they got sick, selfishly, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to get sick and I'm going to be here until the next road trip. So I'm not going to be home for 3.5 weeks. We did it. I've tested several times. I've been negative. Hopefully that continues. But I'm, you know, whatever. That's good. That's not why you're listening. The Raptors are 34-27. As I mentioned before, they are 14th in both offensive rating and defensive rating. Which, if you do the math, if you split it by conference, that makes them 7th in the Eastern Conference. Not that it has to work out like that, but it has. The Raptors are a game and a half behind Boston for 6th. Jaylen Brown had an ankle sprain last night. It wasn't as Sirius has feared, but don't know his status as we record this. And they are three games up on Brooklyn, having split the season series after beating them twice without, you know, their guys, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, Ben Simmons. Andre Drummond missed the game in Toronto after he suffered a... I wasn't sure what the injury was listed as last night, but he suffered it at the beginning of the the game on Monday, stayed in, Sunday. But could not play on Tuesday. Right. They won 133-97 in Brooklyn, one of the better performances of the year, and then came back and then blew the lead and then won by 1 point. Thanks to a James Johnson three at the buzzer to make a 4 point deficit, a 1 point deficit for the Knicks. the Nets. 109-108. They wrap up that little four game stretch, which, you know, we haven't talked to you since the All Star break.
To you since All Star. Yeah, All-Star.
We'll do that in a bit. But they started the All Star break rather dreadfully. By 32 points in Charlotte and by 27 points in Atlanta. So that brings us to now. And before we get into the biggest topic, which I think is the injury situation, since it's so fresh in our mind, I'm going to start with a mailbag question. And I think I know how you're going to feel. but I want to, our buddy Shave, Shave Rarely, shout out. apropos, I am quoting his tweet now, apropos the Dragic reception last night, sports are entertainment that helps us process emotions collectively. That said, being booed likely doesn't feel great. I know Tracy, I'm just going on a tangent. Tracy McGrady said he loved it, but there are different situations and... You know, I'm sure Dragic was somewhat confused by it. Anyway, I'll go on. So what is your standard for a justified boo, and does Dragic meet the standard? I'll let you start, because I think your situation is going to be more black and white than my sort of thought.
Yeah. I think if someone does something that's, like, bad, like really bad... You can boo them.
Like on a human level, like, or on a sports
like on
level?
Like on a human level, or like on a sports level, if you like shove someone from behind, like Pat Beverly did to Chris Paul. You know what I mean? Like if you have a reputation as a villain and that's kind of like your sports reputation that you like live up to, like you love having that reputation, or if you've really like wronged someone. And I mean, it's, I know that sounds vague, but it's not. You know when a player has like requested a trade.
Can I give you an example? Like, what about if you're a Brooklyn fan and when James Harden is back first, do you think it's just quote unquote justified to boo him?
I mean, I wouldn't boo him. No, but I understand.
Yeah, like I right, know you
but
wouldn't.
But I understand
boo anybody,
in that situation
much,
why fans would. Yeah. Like, I don't think he should be like booed like the way Vince Carter was on his return. Like, I don't think it's like that was insane. Like, that level of booing will forever be crazy to me. But like, yeah, I mean, it is sports, and I don't agree with this because I don't like it personally. Like, I don't like booing people, but I understand why someone would boo a player that came to their team, played like 20 games with all parts available, and then decided they wanted out. I get that. I don't like it, but I understand why fans do boo, so that's fine. That being said, the Dragic situation, I just felt bad because, like, from the beginning, it was kind of like a two-part decision there for him to not be with this team. It wasn't all him, and I feel our friend James Herbert tweeted about this last night.
He got some people in his mentions, which I don't feel great about.
And he took some heat, yeah. But I get what he's saying, where he was saying, you know, the team didn't really, like, make it be known that like this was kind of their path, their decision to not have him here. So everyone was really mad at him, but he hadn't done anything like during his time with this team. Like when he was actually physically present, he was great with the young guys. He liked this.
Yeah. And his teammates still mentioned him afterward, as like a positive influence.
Yeah, and I think that Pascal's reaction when he was asked about this kind of summed up my reaction, which was, I don't know what's going on. I like Goron. That is my...
Pascal, by the way,
me.
Had one of his best press conferences or scrums or whatever you want to say last night.
Yeah, and shout out to our man Takashi, who brought out the greatest reaction.
Pascal, like... almost dropped a Damar metaphor, and like we were so close to it. He said, like, talking about his rookie season, he said, if you'll remember, he started, I think, the first 38 games or something, and then came off the bench, and then all of a sudden was in the G League. And he said, like, it's going from the Ritz-Carlton to... And then he's like, I don't want to slander any hotels or anything like that. he was talking about Malachi Flynn, who we'll also get to. But like, we're getting close to metaphor territory, so that could only bode well.
That's always
anyway,
the best.
Let's keep it on Dragic for a bit. I think, like, logically, based on, first of all, I think your standard is a very good one in general.
Thanks.
And I generally agree with it. Last night, I think, was different for a few reasons. First of all, first game back for the fans since December 28th, and the first full arena since, I think, mid-December. And that was awesome. It was good to have the fans back in the arena and, you know, there being some extra drama, even if you don't agree with it, like, it did give it more of a vibe. You know? And that was, like, just as an experience, that was cool. The second part is something I will put on both the Raptors and Dragic. And I'm going to get a bit philosophical here, but I was talking to a friend last... friend last night, and we were talking about... It doesn't matter what we were talking about, but I said one of the most disappointing things about being an adult is realizing how many, like, big decisions, and I'm not talking about a sports team necessarily, it could be a government, like any sort of big entity, big public-facing entity, how many of those decisions are made not because they think it's the right thing to do or the best thing to do, but because it looks the right way. Like, optics are so disproportionately important compared to just... you know, maximizing the public interest or maximizing utility, if you want to, like, get very analytics or whatever, however you want to mention it. And that's why I find this Dragic situation so weird, is because both the team and the player didn't seem to care about optics at all. And so, like, we know the draft. First of all, there was a real personal issue that started this. But as we know, Dragic wasn't playing before the personal issue. So at some point, so when he leaves the team, it's basically the Raptors say he's dealing with a personal issue. He is, he'll be out indefinitely with full team support. We thank Goron and that's basically it. There was never an official update on that. At some point, the issue was resolved as it could be for the moment, but nobody updated him. And then you have Dragic sending pictures about him working out. You have the Raptors, you know, playing Fred VanVleet 40 minutes a game, not playing Malachi Flynn, sometimes playing Delano Banton, and not playing or not playing him. So, like, the whole reason to bench him at the beginning was to get your young players playing, and then they weren't playing. So the natural thought is, well, wouldn't it be nice to have, like, a capable guard behind him, behind Van Vliet, so he's not playing the most minutes per game in the league? And we'll get to his injury, don't worry. I think, basically, what should have been said, and it wouldn't have solved everything, but last night, Nick Nurse said this about Goran Dragic. I just think it was part of the deal, like talking about his contract. It was obviously they needed Goran Dragic's deal to get the Kyle Lowry sign and trade done. For me, my job is to sit here and see if he's going to be one of our top players. Where does he fit in and all of that kind of stuff. I was evaluating to see where he was physically, seeing where he fit in and where we would go from there. I think the biggest characterization of it all is we probably wanted to focus on our younger guys. We wanted to see our younger guys play a lot more minutes. We made that decision fairly early on. I was meeting with him and talking about it all the time. We got to the point where he was okay with it. He understood. If they had said that, I'm not even saying when he went away from the team, but when like people asked about him and people did ask about Goran Dragic, when they like, Fred's playing all these minutes. If they had just said that, and it's like, we believe in our roster, and to the extent that we need to supplement these minutes when we do, however we choose to do it, we're going to rely on our young players because that's what we want to do. That would have gone such a long way in, I don't know if it would have avoided last night, but it would have minimized it. Because that was like the most clear answer I've heard. And that's basically what Goran Dragic said when he spoke to the Nets media after he signed there, was like, they wanted to go young. They didn't want me to be part of the team. Now, I'm not saying it's as black and white as that. Like, I'm sure, like, I don't think either side was tremendously happy with the fit, and they were more than fine to see it go as it went. But if we just got that update 6 weeks ago or whatever, it would have gone such a long way to avoiding the booze last night. Which, again, I'm not, like, even that against, because it was fun, and I think Dragic is mature enough that he probably doesn't care that much. But yeah, that's how I feel.
I think you probably would have still had some booze just because fans haven't gotten to boo or cheer in person for so long, and you know that was a fun moment for them. But I think if people had known that like Goran had been in constant communication with the coaching staff leading up to that, like it wasn't like he just like left and hadn't told anybody and it was a shock or something, you know, like it was a decision that was made by the team, really.
By the team, like they were certainly a big part of it. They were not against the decision that happened,
and they were fine with it. It wasn't like he spurned his teammates and like left. And then also, I just need to say, when you mentioned like the reaction to like the videos and shots of him working out, this may be the first time in NBA history that an NBA player has elicited rage by videos coming out of them working out during a season. Like, usually players are getting ripped for not working on their free throws, or if they go to a movie and tweet about the movie, people are like, you should be practicing your defense. But Goran just like quietly working out elicited rage from people because he wasn't where they thought he should be.
Just to close this off, before the game, Nick Nurse said he really didn't think it was going to be that much of a deal. If there was a reaction, there'd probably be some booing, but that was obviously it, or that was it, according to him. I mean, he didn't get like Vince or T-Mac level vitriol, but in terms of them staying on it all game, they did. Just the intensity wasn't as high. That's what I would say, having been in the arena for many of those types of games. So after the game, Nick Nurse said, I was wrong about that question. Man, I've got to get clued in what's going on here a bit more. I was completely off on that one. And he said, the only time I really noticed them, I think, was when Gary was shooting free throws and Dragic checked in and they were booing so much. I was hoping they were going to stop before Gary got the ball. They really have fun doing that, don't they? They were ready. They were ready, man.
That was my favorite part when he said they really have fun doing that, because clearly fans do enjoy booing. And I understand that's part of sports, but that's just a part of sports that like I didn't...
You don't resonate. It doesn't resonate with you.
It just makes me feel bad. I don't enjoy it. But anyway, I understand.
Yeah. So
I also still love Goran. So that's where I am. I'm Pascal.
And you gave props to the gray in his hair now, which as a gray bearded man, at least in part, made me feel good.
I'm glad. Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, no, he looks great. Love the gray.
He was also a Nets high +15 on Tuesday in which had more to do with the Raptors bench, where if we heard that story, not being great. Mm-hmm. Although, anyway, let's get to the biggest issue with the team right now as a whole before we move on to some positives, which, as always, is injuries. Fred VanVleet, right knee soreness. They call it, Nick Nurse has been constantly referring to a bruise or a contusion. Mm-hmm. I don't know this. I think the best bet is it's a bone bruise. Again, that's just me reading the tea leaves of how they're treating this injury and how everybody has talked about it. But I could be wrong there. And you know, a bone bruise is way, way different than, you know, the purple thing that shows up on your thigh when you walk into the table. not that I'm speaking from personal experience or anything like that. OG Anunoby, so he played in the first two games after playing 9 minutes in the All-Star game and then sat out the last two games against Brooklyn. Hashtag Ewing theory, hashtag the Raptors are better without VanVleet. OG Anunoby has missed the four games since the All-Star break. He has a small non-displaced or undisplaced fracture of his ring finger. Nick Nurse went into detail about what a specialist saw either on Monday or Tuesday in LA, and they said it could have been there for as many as like 3 or 4 months, certainly there for a few weeks at least. The injury is almost healed, they think. The timeline he, Nick Nurse, mentioned for completely healing is 2 weeks. And that's where I'll get into this quote from Nick Nurse, because it appears that both players could play right now in terms, like, they can go out there. There's a small difference. They will aggravate. There's a small chance that they will aggravate the injury or just prolong the recovery, like just keep it sore longer, like not getting to, you know, quote unquote full health for a longer time. So here's what Nick Nurse had to say. He was specifically talking about VanVleet's injury, but the same goes for OG's injury pretty much. There's nothing wrong with it. He's got a bruise. It's back to whoever asked, is there a chance he can make it worse? Yeah, it's bruised. He could get it hit again. He could play, as we've seen as well. Obviously, it probably gets a lot better with rest, and it gets better a lot quicker. For me, if guys want to play, we're playing them, if they want to play through it. I know it sounds like a super cliche. Nobody's super healthy this time of year. Nobody's ever 100% 60 games in. But it's true, though. It's true. I'm not 100% at all. The last part was a joke. He wasn't comparing his, you know, I'm sure coaching stresses and whatever ailments to the physical limitations that are put on players when they're injured. But the point being that, yes, VanVleet and Anunoby could play as soon as Thursday. And the question is, given where the Raptors are, given that at least with Anunoby,
given the Eastern Conference has...
Yeah, given like the mess in the Eastern Conference, even though the Raptors have a certain cushion both ways in seventh right now, there's still 20 games left that can change. How do you feel about the... And I asked Fred VanVleet this question, I believe, on Friday before he got back.
Know what his answer is going
to
be.
I asked, like, how do you balance the need to be on the court for this team to succeed and the desire for you to be, quote, like, basically right and or as fully healthy as possible for this team to really, really succeed? And he, you know, erred on the side of, like, I want to play, this is my job to play, which I think, you know, explains why he played the first two games. He thought he could play through it, and obviously he wasn't at the level he felt he needed to be, and the soreness wasn't going away, so he's taken some games off. How do you feel about the push-pull in either or both their cases?
Yeah, I think it's a difficult balance every season for, like Nick said, pretty much every team has to deal with this at some point, especially towards the end or the latter half of the season. That being said, I think it's funny. It's not funny, but it's illuminating, I should say. When you look at the case of OG, no one knew that he had this injury.
Yeah.
And we had talked at times about his offensive efficiency and his shot.
Especially heading into the break. You know, yeah.
especially heading into the break. And it just shows that, like, so often we only have part of the picture and we're trying to put the pieces together to get the full picture, but we're only going to know what people are going to tell us. And NBA teams aren't always as forthcoming with injury information. And in this case, I don't even know if they knew. You know, it sounds like he went to see a specialist.
They knew he was sore at some point. I don't know what point.
But he didn't.
But they knew he was sore.
But he didn't know about the
fracture. And he practiced, practiced on Wednesday and Thursday. In Charlotte, their first two practices back, and I think they were hoping that they were hoping the soreness would go away. They took some x-rays. I'm not clear if they had taken x-rays before, so I don't want to say they didn't, but like obviously he didn't feel it was a big enough thing that it really warranted it.
Right.
I'm not going to get into a whole should they have taken pictures, shouldn't they have, like, obviously they should. Obviously they should have, but like we don't know exactly how it played out, and I don't want to bemoan that too much. The point is he was playing through it and he practiced those first 2 days, so like it's not like it was this huge.
I think at some point the pain, either they expected the pain to go away and it didn't, and that was a cause for concern, or the pain had gotten to a point where, you know, it was okay, there's something not right here kind of thing. And I think that when you're dealing with players who, you know, have different mindsets and different levels of pain thresholds and all of those things, that is kind of the difficult part on behalf of the coaching staff and the training staff, because in a way you have to balance letting players go out there to play if they want to play, which, you know, Nick said, and if it's not going to get worse or if they're not, you know, likely to hurt themselves, with also protecting those guys that you know will never rest on their own.
Yeah.
And I mean, with Fred especially, you know that if he has an opportunity to go out there, he's going to
go. Against Atlanta, Nick Nurse like all but ruled him out before the game. He was like, he's, you know, very unlikely, I'd say, but he's still testing some things out. And then he played, and he wasn't good on defense. Like Trae Young was great against him. That's not all on Fred, obviously, but like he wasn't very effective as the first line of defense on him. But he also had, I think, like 24-9 or something. So it's not like he was out there like hobbling around and couldn't do anything on the basketball court. He was probably their second most effective offensive player next to Precious Achiuwa that game. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is knowing your players and knowing your personnel and their personalities so that you can better know when to protect them from themselves and give them, you know, a break that maybe they won't ask for or tell you that they need. But also it's a tough situation going into the end of the season too, because even when you look at rest, the topic of rest, not even so much injuries, but just resting, there have been a lot of cases where teams have rested guys to make them quote unquote fresh for the postseason. And then when they come back, the rhythm is all messed up. So
yeah,
I get
that happened,
why coaches...
I think with Kyle Lowry before the Washington sweep, if memory serves.
Yep, it sure did. It sure did. So I understand why some players and some coaches are very like hesitant to do that. That being said, I am glad, not glad, I'm not glad that Fred is not playing, but I was glad that he rested and hopefully got a bit of time that will make him feel better, especially with players like Fred, who I know, you know, won't sit out unless there's actually something wrong. I just think that if you have a period of days or games where you can get them rest, for sure do it. That being said, this week is kind of a nightmare for the Raptors. They have like 7 games in 7 days.
With Thursday and Friday, but they finish off a 6, it was, I guess it was a 5-7 week and 6-8 to start the break. And they don't get
the post break.
I'm like you. I think like I would lean more heavily toward resting them now. Maybe, you know, it's just Boston's ahead of them is playing so well.
I know.
And like, I hate
like,
to like,
but it's like nothing matters.
I hate to fixate on
it. Doesn't matter at all.
I hate to fixate on the standings because like Nick Nurse, like I just sort of want them to be playing as well as possible. But I think you do have to consider the standings. You have to consider the opponents. Like they'll lose to Detroit on Thursday. We know this. So it doesn't matter if Fred VanVleet plays. I'm joking, but not entirely. But I would, like, if it's 2 weeks for Anunoby and he comes back and it's a better chance that he's a 38% three-point shooter than a 32% shooter, Like, okay, I like I don't mind Yuta Watanabe or Thaddeus Young or like even Precious getting some more minutes, even if it means you lose a game or two more. With Fred VanVleet, like, he's just so important to what they do. I think it's a bit more complicated, but like he said when he basically took a week off, like, if you like, I think we can reasonably agree that 9 minutes in the All-Star game and one trip around the court in the 3-point contest probably did not affect Fred VanVleet's health all that much. Which I think I don't know who wrote it, if anybody wrote it, but he certainly felt some sort of way about it after the Atlanta game. So anyway, if he feels that like another week will make tangible difference, then sure, keep him out. If he doesn't think it's going to make a difference, then that's another story. But I would lean on the side of caution here.
With both of their, you know, starters, but particularly with Fred, as we've seen, he's played such an important role this season. The standings don't matter if you get to where you'd like to be and then you don't have players.
And
that,
like, they're probably going to be an underdog in, I mean, not probably, they, like, if they make the playoffs, they will be the underdog in the first round series, unless like they're playing against Cleveland, in which case like Cleveland will still have the better record in all likelihood. So, you know, in almost any series, they'd be an underdog, and, you know, let's give yourself the best chance to win. And if it all goes wrong, well, you still get your draft pick then. Everybody wins. I don't think we're there. I think the Raptors, you know, are more than likely finishing seventh, and the Raptors have to keep that in mind. And you might, like, your best shot as an underdog is to have your best players healthy. So I would lean that way while acknowledging it's not that simple, because there's no guaranteed full health, and I think that's especially the case with VanVleet and the nature of his injury.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
But something that has helped ease, I don't know if it has helped ease Fred VanVleet's pain, probably not, ease Raptors fans' pain, is your boy, Mr. D at the midterm himself, Malachi Flynn, Mr. 43-minute, the 43-minute man. So he stepped in as a starter. He was getting a bit of a longer look in the Charlotte and Atlanta games. Starts in Van Vliet's place in Brooklyn. Has 18-5-4, 15-8-6 in the win in Toronto. Overall, 13 assists to just one turnover. Before I ask the big question, the big long-term question, thoughts on Malachi?
My thoughts are, can you please go back and change his grade to reflect his play when he is given minutes?
I can only, as Nick Nurse said last night, he can only give he can only give playing time to the guys who earn it when they're out there, and I can only give grades to guys who, you know, based on how they've played in those minutes.
Then it should have been an incomplete because you weren't seeing him play. That is my
take. Or should I have given Nick Nurse a worse grade?
No, I don't think.
I think you're just being mean to me because you can't be mean to, or you don't want to be mean to Nick or Malachi here.
No, I just think that I felt very strongly about that grade.
I remember at least. I did not expect to get because yelled I at definitely, about Malachi Flynn that day.
I know. But I really just thought that Malachi is a better player than what we had seen, obviously, and we hadn't gotten to see much. And I really wanted him to get an opportunity, and I'm absolutely thrilled for him. Like,
he's been awesome.
He just looks confident. Like, you know, he was making confident decisions. I think knowing that you're not going to be as likely to be pulled out for Fred because Fred's not playing in the game kind of helps with that. Like, you stop looking toward the bench. You stop second-guessing yourself because you know there's a certain amount of minutes you're going to be playing. I think that definitely just helps any player kind of, like, brush that off and, like, get out of their own head and get into the game kind of thing. But, yeah, he has been awesome in every way, and I'm thrilled for him.
Yeah, and I think the frustration here with me and with some fans is like, yeah, I gave him the grade he did, but that didn't mean I didn't think that he or Delano shouldn't have been playing more. Like I agree with Nurse's assessment that when he was playing really poorly. This is the second time all year he has received more than 10 minutes in three consecutive games. And I think
that matters. Of course, it matters.
And here's where I'll take issue with Nick Nurse a little bit. Like, I don't think that's enough of a he was bad in those minutes, but I don't think that's enough of a runway for a developing player to like get in a rhythm to really have a chance. I think at some point, and there was more of a chance for longer periods for Banton, so like they made their choice at a certain point, but at some point, Nick or Malachi Flynn should have been given 15 minutes a night for like 5 to 10 straight games. And like, even while Fred VanVleet was healthy, and I'm glad he's now producing, but I think the frustration, and this ties back to Dragic, was that, okay, if Dragic isn't there, then let's actually play the young guys. And too often, like, there was a 7-man or a 6.5 or a 7.5-man rotation. And we've seen how much that Flynn and his skill set, which is not, you know, in abundance on the Raptors roster, just that level of organization, that threat of, you know, creating off the pick and roll as the ball handler, like, that means a lot to the team. Like, there were times last night where it was like, you know, Pascal can't do that. I mean, Pascal Siakam had it's a foul trouble, but it's like they need Malachi Flynn out there to steady the ship, and that's why he played 42 minutes and 45 seconds. So, moving on to that, can we get him a rotation spot? Like, can we get him those 15 minutes a game now? Like, because that's the bigger question to me.
In the rundown, you had this written as, can we give him a rotation spot? Jesus Christ.
I didn't want to say it because I thought I might offend somebody.
Oh. Well,
mostly yeah, you. I know you're not like a devout Christian or anything like that, but I don't know how you were going to react to that.
That does not offend me. I hope it doesn't offend anyone listening.
But go on.
If it does, apologies. But I legit
sorry if you were
laughed
offended
at that. No, but I laughed at that when I read it because, yes, he needs to play and he should play.
Yeah, and it's and for everybody's really benefit, for right? Him. Like it's to get Fred VanVleet down from 38 minutes to 35 minutes. It's to get Pascal Siakam.
And if you are bringing Fred back with this injury or this bruise still, lessening minutes, lessening the impact can certainly lessen the chance of him re-injuring.
Yeah, there's just less chance to run a knee into another knee, if we want to make it super simplistic. I think he's got to be there.
Let's bump that D to a C plus.
Well, you know, he's on his way to certainly lifting up his final year grade. That's the frustration with it all, is nothing wrong with wanting to go young, but then go young. Like don't put all the minutes in the world on five players. Anyway, one of those guys who has been in the rotation pretty much consistently, Precious Achiuwa, I alluded to him earlier. 21-9 in that lost cause of a game against Atlanta, 20-8 against Brooklyn, quieter night in the back-to-back against Brooklyn back in Toronto. But when Pascal Siakam fouled out, which we will just zoom over because we don't have time for it, he was the guy who Nick Nurse put back in. So obviously, gaining trust in late-game situations, I'm pretty sure, Chris Boucher had been the best Raptors reserve for so long that he probably would have gotten those minutes by default. Nick Nurse sort of said he liked Precious's ability to, you know, switch and get out on the perimeter and defend more than Chris Boucher in those minutes when Siakam went out. I agree. But I think the revelation has been, not revelation, but the marked improvement has been not only in making some shots, but in just in general in his offensive decision making.
Three pointers. Precious shooting threes, man.
Corner three, Monday night it was like put Precious and Chris Boucher in the corners and just let it rip. Like
it was crazy. It was really fun to watch. And it would be really cool if we could see that being an actual part of his game, you know?
Yeah, that'll be a long-term development thing. Like, I don't think we're ready to do that. But, like, the stuff that I...
Why can't I be ready to
to expect it. That's what I mean. Like if he goes next 15, like, that's not a surprise. And that doesn't mean he should...
Well, remember when Pascal had that stretch
the 1-for-27 stretch or whatever it was. I was about to say, it doesn't mean he should stop taking them when they're wide open and there.
Right.
It just means, like, he's still developing as a player. And, like, I mean, Duncan Robinson was a terrible three-point, not terrible, but a below-average three-point shooter for half of this season. And so, like, that's the extent to which three... And now he's taking harder three-pointers than Precious Achiuwa. That is obvious, but that... You know, three-point shots are high-variance shots, and high-variance shots will vary highly. But the stuff I've loved, and I saw it especially in the game against Brooklyn, is like, or in Brooklyn, I should say, stop playing the same goddamn teams, Raptors, like just a bit more nimbleness, not running into defenders, not taking the first shot available necessarily. Like that huge dunk he had in Brooklyn on Monday, that was in Atlanta on Saturday, is he took a pass, and instead of just, like, going into a set move, he dribbled and noticed his defender was on the side of him and then just kept on taking it. There wasn't, like, a predetermined move. And there were a few plays in Brooklyn where he sort of avoided a charge and either dunked or drew the fouls just with, like, some nifty footwork. I think he had four assists in that game against the Nets, which, again, we're not going to expect, but are signs of a player whose offensive process has been frustrating at times, to say the least, to where you still see signs of that process, and, like, yeah, he's not done growing there, but you can see the development happening.
An interesting thing, too, especially because we just talked about Malachi, is with Malachi, as he's gotten more time, it feels like he's gotten, you know, out of his head, out of looking at the bench, and is just into the game. With Precious, it's almost like now he is having more patience, like, offensively, like, instead of just, like, going without thinking. Like, Malachi needed to kind of think less, in a way, whereas Precious kind of needed to just, like, take his time, settle in.
Think more and... is what you're not saying.
and yeah, like, it's really, I feel like both players are clearly showing that they're feeling more comfortable, but in different ways. Yeah. And with Precious, it's...
The cool thing with Precious really nice is it's happened organically in what's more or less been his role. Now, that role has expanded because he's playing well, but, like, it's not all of a sudden Nick Nurse has to give him 35 minutes a game and he's playing well. Like, he will play 15 to 20 minutes almost every night, and if he's playing well, he will play more than that. And he has. that's all there is to it. The third positive...
How did we wait until this point to talk about this?
We're upgrading him from Beanie Baby to Scotty Basketball. Scotty Barnes, that's a play on Johnny Football, the nickname of Johnny Manziel. back when he was at Texas A&M. And then there started to be a collection of Johnnies just nicknamed by the sports they played, who were like supposed to be the epitome of like having fun within that sport. There's Calgary is so dumb.
Like, I love them. Yeah, no, but they're incredibly dumb.
Calgary Flames, Johnny Hockey, Johnny Goudreau. There's Johnny Gargano in wrestling, Johnny Wrestling. So we got Scotty Basketball.
I know none of these people.
Yeah, Scotty Basketball. And I say that because, goddamn, I am really breaking any concern I had with mentioning God's name in vain.
And I was thinking that earlier you said goddamn earlier, and I was like, so what's the difference? Yeah. Anyway,
he is just freaking everywhere, Holly. I'll let you take it from there, but he just, in the win in Toronto, it's not like even he was scoring that much. He did not with 18 points, but like I tweeted it, like 50-50 balls seem like 80-20 mm-hmm. balls for him sometimes. It's amazing.
Yeah, I think it was I can't remember the exact time, but in the fourth, that like Dirk shot he made.
Yeah, the offense, like he started the play by screwing up and picking up his dribble. Like so that's why he had to take the shot, is like he picked up his dribble. Nobody could get open. Then he was like, well, shot clock's winding down. I have to take this one-footed fadeaway. And we've seen like moments against shot clock that. What reminded me was like that game against Durant and the Nets earlier against Brooklyn in the year. Like he's sort of him dribbling out and hitting that three with the hand in his face. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, I'm going to hit this like ridiculously difficult shot now in bad circumstances, even though I haven't done it all game. And like, other than one three-pointer in the last two nights, I've only scored within 4 feet of the basket. But now I'm just going to hit this very, very difficult shot. Go on.
Yeah, you know who hits those kind of shots? Special players. And that's what Scotty is. Watching that possession, I was getting more and more nervous. Like, I was like, oh, no, oh, no. Oh, no, like, this is going to be bad. This is going to be bad. And as the shot clock was winding down, I was just like, okay, this is like a blown possession. And then bam, like there he goes. It's like, it's almost like he's like, all right, I guess I'm gonna have to do this myself then. Like, it's harder than what we expected. All right, no worries. Yeah, that was awesome.
His closing stretch against the Nets, he played 41 minutes, but first he had that pass to Thad Young for a dunk, mm-hmm. and that put the Raptors what seemed to be in a safe position. By the phrasing of that sentence, you can tell that it was not a safe position. The Nets tie it up. Deep Seth Curry three after giving up an offensive rebound. And then Gary Trent gets fouled. And Barnes, so the Raptors lead by two.
Uh-oh, I think
and
you Barnes may have froze.
First blocks Seth Curry and then gets the rebound in
there?
Traffic. There are like six guys in the paint. And he's like, whoop, got this. And gets the rebound in basically the biggest defensive possession of the night. And that's what I mean. He just like finds a way to the ball, like he's a magnet for the ball sometimes. That's how he went 11 for his first 11 mostly. They weren't calling plays for him. He was against Brooklyn on Monday. He was just finding ways to get the damn ball. And it's so impressive. It's such an impressive skill. And it doesn't even sound like a skill the way I talk about it, but it is.
Yeah, he's just been incredible, and I continue to love his no-look passes, and also just the confidence that he seems to have. Like, he seems very unrattled, even in these situations, these close games where they're coming back, and where he's kind of, like, leading the charge and leading the way and being in control, at least offensively, and that's been really fun to see. And also, it's never a bad thing when after one of your road performances as a rookie, the last player to have a line like that is Shaquille O'Neal. Like, that was the 28-16 4-5 in Brooklyn. And I think, what did he shoot in that game? 12
it was
14
like 12 or 15, 11 or 14. I'll find it if you want to monologue for a bit.
That was just incredible, and to do that on the road again. I mean, we've seen since the beginning of the season, since he hit those free throws in Indiana at the end of the game to ice the win, that the road doesn't seem to bother Scotty, whether he's playing at home with fans, without fans, on the road. He's really
12
good.
For 14, and he had those big free throws in the Miami triple overtime game, I believe, to send it to the first overtime. Mm-hmm. Scotty Barnes good, and like I was worrying about him in those first two games after the break. I was worrying about a lot of things, myself mostly, but also Raptors related. But he has been awesome. We're running a bit long. Sorry, go on.
Oh, I was just going to say, Scotty at the All-Star game or All-Star weekend, not the performance that maybe he had thought he was going to have for a lot of it, but oh my goodness, the best personality and smile and Instagram stories and clips to post on Twitter ever. Seeing him hug his fellow teammates and making fun of himself for missing shots. Also, he and Precious had a really like stressful day trying to get into Cleveland. Flights got canceled, weather, really long, extended day. Fred VanVleet saved the day with them flying with him, which I don't know why that wasn't just the plan in the beginning. But man, it was fun to see the entire NBA like world on social media kind of fall in love with Scotty the same way that we did, seeing bits of his personality continue.
Yeah, I think we talked about it. Future All-Star Weekend host, Scotty Barnes.
Yes.
Once his like personality fully comes out, like beyond just the smile and let's have a good time and hug me.
I relate to the smile, let's have a good time, hug me. Yes.
Well, not right now so much, but in general, yes. You can 2 minutes for you, Holly. Either talk about Ja Morant or Fred VanVleet's family.
My goodness.
You can only choose one.
Oh. I'm gonna choose Ja Morant because oh my God. I
still have a minute and 45 seconds.
Literally, I don't know what to say except, oh my God, he is so incredible. He had 52 points the other night. He became the first Grizzlies player to top 50 points. But just the way that he scores, the things that he does, and then you look at his actual size and you're like, he's tiny. Like, he's not this huge guy. He's so wiry. He's able to contort in the air. His ability to finish, I don't even understand. He had a dunk the other night that was just crazy. And then there was like an end of the quarter shot that he made where Steven Adams sent this gorgeous, I'm sure you've seen the play by now, right?
Yeah.
Like full court inbounds pass to him. And he caught the ball like in the air, like contorting his legs and like got the shot off without coming down. Like at the end of the quarter, like there was like, I don't even know, like a second, 2 seconds left. Just an incredible shot. He is just such a vibrant and fun and incredible player. And it's so, he just feels like he fits in Memphis so well. And I love it for them. I love it for that group of guys. They all seem to love each other so much and they're having so much fun. He's my favorite player to watch. And why the hell isn't he on national TV more? Please just let me see Ja every night, every game, everywhere.
Do you want me to send you a list of the biggest television markets in the United States?
Listen, it doesn't matter. Superstars trump everything else.
Yeah, Milwaukee's had their share of national TV games over the last few years.
They have. Ja is incredible, and he's the best.
Yeah.
I love him.
Let's get to a few Twitter
comments. I also love the VanVleet family. Continue.
Yeah, I was taking that as slander of the VanVleet family. A few Twitter questions quickly before we have to say goodbye. Aldo Miha asks, Scotty is just a baby, a beanie baby, and already so physical. How do you see his build progressing? Is he going to get to Giannis or LeBron level? The main difference is like, go look at Giannis and LeBron rookie year pictures and look at Scotty Barnes right now. Like, Scotty is way bigger than those guys were when they came into the league in terms of just like
looking at Giannis, like how much Giannis's body and frame has filled out and changed in a relatively short amount of time is actually crazy. Like looking where Scotty is now. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't think it's like that hard to imagine. We're not comparing the players. We're comparing just the size and build. Like, Scotty's much bigger than where they started from. He is older than LeBron was, so that's certainly part of it. He's not going to be 7'1", I don't think, like Giannis,
Man, he's really tall, though. Sometimes you see the Raptors will post, like, a video. Listen, they post, like, a video to, like, their Instagram or their Twitter, and it'll just be, like, Scotty with his teammates, like, walking to the bus or whatever. And sometimes I'm just like, holy shit, this guy is so tall. Like, he just looks like he's getting taller by the road trip. I would like to see how tall Scotty Barnes actually is.
I would like to see you try and measure him. That's what I would like to see. Ali Abbasi, this is our last question. We appreciate all the questions. Look out for them, me calling for them on Twitter on the days we record, which usually Monday or Tuesday. I thought this was an interesting one because it's not something we talk about much often because it's not the role he has. And I think it's a bit more in the focus because Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer mentioned that Gary Trent has actually been one of the better isolation options in the league this year in terms of efficiency. Mm-hmm. But that's mostly been as a scorer. Holly, what do you think is the ceiling on Gary Trent Jr.'s Ooh. Playmaking?
Ooh, that's a great question. And you're right. It's something I really haven't thought of because I just think of Gary as instant offense. I mean, I think that the thing with Gary that really has impressed me is when he first came here, I was super impressed with his defense. And then we started to see like what he could do offensively. I think he had that game winner against Washington shortly after he came to the team last year, when they were still in Tampa. That was awesome. And then he kind of had that stretch of really big scoring games. So then we were like, oh damn, like this guy can really, really shoot it and score. And then this season, he started out the season prior to being injured, really, really great defensive intensity. And then now we're obviously seeing what he is offensively. But I think he's just a really smart player and he picks things up quickly and he desperately wants to be better. Like he's really hungry to be better and to help his team in any way. So yeah, I feel like with Gary, he's the type of player that I wouldn't put I don't really have an obvious limitation anything because
go ahead, sorry.
As he learns his teammates better, as he finds more comfort and just like routine and reps within the schemes and his teammates and the system, I would not be surprised at all for him to become more of a playmaker for his
teammates. I think the question is so heavily based on how the Raptors use him, right? Because like like when you have Fred and Pascal operating in two-man games or isolation, and we can argue whether they should be doing that as much. I mean the two-man game I love, give me more of that, but
you do.
But you know, Trent's coming off pin downs or he's coming off screens and being told basically to get his in the mid range. And then you have Scotty Barnes who like his instinct is to pass. Like that's what he wants to do. So, you know, with this roster playing the way they are, his playmaking ceiling is defined pretty low. But can he get better at it to the point where they change like who they are, not you know, in a big grand way, but in which he's like not a point guard, but certainly is given those like some more pick and roll opportunities, some more, you know, when he gets the defender on his hip, on his back, does he start to see the floor a bit better rather than just seeing it as an opportunity for his mid range? Sure. So I don't think he's developing into, you know, a point guard or a hybrid guard, like even anytime soon. I think like his biggest weapon will continue to be shot making, but like, can he be a 4-assist-per-game type guy in like a slightly different roster of, you know, maybe touch 5? I think that's possible. Like it just seems so implausible on this current team, the way they're playing. But you need reps to get better at a facet of your game, and there just aren't many of them available. But I would say, like, with a summer's work, like, if that's his charge in the offseason, like, you got to start to see these mid-range opportunities for the whole floor and not just as opportunities. And I'm not calling him selfish or anything like that, but, like, he certainly has a mindset when he's in that, and that the Raptors have drilled that into him, and they need it, quite frankly. But if they're built slightly differently and they encourage him to go down that path, I think I've seen enough this year to where I think he has a lot of room and the capability to improve, if that makes sense.
Also, he's 23 years old.
Yep. It's good to...
We're old. Gary is so young.
Yeah, when we asked... Happy when we, he's when in we Toronto. Said happy love birthday watching to Fred Van Vliet on Friday, I think somebody... I think Doug Smith called him like old man sarcastically. And he said, Fred said, I'm not old. And I said, around here, everything is relative. And Fred said, well, I'm younger than you. Let's start with that. Oh. It's true.
He's the best.
Yeah. Thad Young is, I think, 2 years younger than me. Or, maybe three. It's not good. The last player who was older than me was Marc Gasol. And I think the bet is that I'll never be on a roster with a player that's older than me. I'll never be covering a team. I'll never be on a roster with any NBA player, Ollie.
Yes, I don't think you're going to.
But I don't think I will ever be covering a player younger than me ever again, which I hadn't realized until I just said it out loud right now.
Uh-oh, crisis.
Yeah, well, let's turn on an episode of Station 11 and really cheer myself up. That's all we got for now. Quick rundown through the week, and we'll do a quick prediction, me looking up the box score of that
game. As you do this, I'm going to ask you a question. If the Bulls finish in first in the East, where does DeMar DeRozan rank on your MVP ranking?
Right now, in terms of overall impact, I have Jokic, Embiid, and Giannis as, like, unassailable. And I know the Bulls are having a better year, and I know DeMar has been sensational, but I just can't look at everything. I think the one that people would argue with me the most is Giannis. But just, like, look at what he does. I can't blame him that the team isn't coming together and that they're probably in a bit of a, you know, shout out to Dwayne Casey, right, malaise this year. Like, he's like more impactful by several metrics than in his MVP season. So
it's kind of scary.
I can't put him higher than fourth with Chris Paul's injury. Like, my five players, and I'm ready to change my mind on this. It's like, Giannis, Jokic, and Embiid are in the first tier. DeMar and Ja are in the second tier, because Chris Paul sort of falls out there with his injury to end the season.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard for me to see a scenario in which anybody changes my mind on those top five. But, like, again, we still have 6 weeks left, so I'm not ready. But he and Ja are in that 4-5 range for me right now. If the Bulls finish first, could he pass one of those three guys? I think something would have to dramatically happen to them, either in like an injury sense or in their play really going downhill. So I'm realistically, I have a tough time putting them higher than fourth, imagining a scenario.
I was just asking. I thought that was going to be a quick throwaway question, but you really
I have to think about these things. The Raptors guaranteed last night, Thursday, versus Detroit.
Maybe because we're guaranteeing it will reverse jinx them.
They got a back-to-back against Orlando in Cleveland to start a six-game road trip. We'll come to you either on Monday or Tuesday after that game. What you going to predict, Holly?
Two and one.
Do you want to specify who they're going to win? And
yeah, I think they're going to defeat Detroit and Orlando, and then they're going to lose against Cleveland.
I'm not even joking. Like, I'm not doing this for a cheap pop. Like, there's something in my gut that really feels this way. I think they're going to lose against Detroit, lose against Orlando, and beat Cleveland. I know how stupid that sounds. And I know how stupid...
I mean, does it? What sounds more stupid? The Raptors... picking the Raptors to defeat Cleveland or Detroit, or lose against Detroit? Why do I keep saying Cleveland?
Because they're in the same Pistons division, and they've been pretty bad for a long time. Or not so much with Cleveland.
Also, the Raptors have lost to the Cavs a lot in history.
Orlando, I tweeted it last night. Like, these teams are more talented than you think. They're like,
oh, for sure.
Like Detroit is like Kelly Olynyk hitting a game winner the other night. It's not like Kelly Olynyk is like a great player, but like he's pretty damn good. Like he's a good NBA player. Mm-hmm. Like Sadiq Bey is good. Cade Cunningham is coming on strongly.
Listen, if you're in the NBA, you're a good player.
Beef Stew is like a solid rotation player. Like there are very few just inept talent, like low on talent teams. Now some will go in that.
Yeah, well, there used to be a lot of teams where you would be like, oh, that's a guaranteed win or that's an expected win. But like the way this season is going too, where almost every night you can look at the box scores and a team is losing by 30 plus, like just randomly. Sometimes it makes sense. Sometimes
even
it does
Portland,
not make sense.
Who's like doing the whole Tampa tank, like they refuse to go away. I don't know how they've done since the break, but like, they're even trying to lose, and it's not going so well. So, my point is Detroit and Orlando have more talent than their records indicate, and I don't think it's a shock when they win games. And, like, the Raptors play, taking the win in Brooklyn aside, has not made me feel great about the state of this team. And so that's the direction I'm going to go, but, I have no degree of certainty about it. We got to get out of here, Holly. Thank you as always to you. you wrote about Canada basketball, so look for that on the Canada basketball site as Canada basketball wins twice. Nate Bjorkren.
Go Canada.
Anything else you want to plug while we're here?
No, I mean, I wrote a piece on the Nembhard brothers. Unfortunately.
Yeah, the Holly McKenzie jinx. Jeez.
Unfortunately, it went live the day that Ryan hurt his wrist and ended his season, which was really disappointing because what an incredible freshman season he has had. That was just so sad to hear. That's all I've got.
All right. You can catch my stuff at The Athletic.
Subscribe to The Athletic.
Thank you always for listening. We'll catch you next week here on Jurassic Pie. See ya!
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.